And of course, our special guest this hour, Stanley Bing, Immortal Life. We're going to take your phone calls, your questions, and do you want to live forever? Check in with us. And welcome back, Stanley Bing with us. We'll get to your questions as well this hour as we talk about his work, Immortal Life. What was it? What was the catalyst for you, Stanley, that got you to write this book?
Well, I guess it's that thing we were talking about before, which was the feeling of, you know, being uncomfortable in the world that we're living in. You know, as you get older, I guess you kind of see things a little bit differently than when you're a kid. And so I'm looking around and I'm seeing everybody immersed in their screens, and I'm looking at some of the science that's developing about immortality and about digital, you know, brain transfer, and so I got very interested in writing about that, because I guess, you know, the issue of immortality is an eternal issue. I mean, religion has promised it, various science and technologies have promised it. But in doing that, in looking at the possibility of this digital immortality that we're talking about, I also had to imagine what kind of a world might exist where this was possible, if you see what I mean. You know, how would people travel? What would the government be like? What corporations would exist? What would people be like with each other? What would the United States look like at that time? So it got me into thinking about sort of creating a whole world, and then telling a story that moved really fast and got people interested and staying with it. Because, you know, in the end, writing a story is all about telling a tale that makes people excited, and you want them to stick with it. So there's a lot of suspense in the book, and I really got into the whole idea that the science I was reading about might one day, you know, take place. And I read a heck of a lot of scientific stuff. You know, the internet, in addition to being, you know, a lot of trivia at times, also is a terrific library and research tool. And I looked at all this stuff, you know, for example, how will people travel from city to city? Well, you know, our friend Elon Musk, who invented the Tesla and has done a bunch of other things, you know, he has a thing that he's trying to invent called the Hyperloop, which will move people from cities within, you know, used to take several hours, it could take 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about that kind of thing, well, then maybe you're talking about Southern California being one large city that extends from San Diego to San Francisco. There's no differentiation anymore. It's just one large metroplex. You know, how will people travel if everybody's in a self-driving car? Well, those things will probably be a lot more like moving living rooms, because there won't be any steering wheels. So, and there's a lot of kind of funny stuff that, you know, hovercraft, and then I love to write about robots and androids of all kinds. You know, there are several intelligent Roombas in my book. That kind of, you know, Roombas are those little
vacuums that work on their own.
They float in the air, and they have the personality of the individual that, you know, implanted them. And they're servants, and they have personalities. And I love to write artificial intelligent creatures. There's a pet that's one of my favorites. She's kind of a combination cocker spaniel and iguana that belongs to one of the characters in the book. And just had a lot of fun with it. And so, you know, once you begin to think about a world where people could live forever digitally, there's just a whole, you know, tsunami of other stuff that comes to mind, and you begin to tell a story and you get hooked on that. I also have been a science fiction fan since I was a little boy. You know, I mean, I read Ray Bradbury and all of Isaac Asimov, and you know, I just realized when I was halfway through the book that I was writing science fiction. I didn't really know I was doing that. I thought I was just telling a story, but I did get hooked on it. I had a good time with it.
Is there a downside to any of this?
Sure, there's tons of downside. I mean, the book really has a very questioning attitude about all of this digital life that we're creating. And in fact, there's a whole group of people that are you know, that live in the book who are green people. They live off the grid. They don't want to be monitored. They don't want things in their heads. They don't want self-driving vehicles. They like their Ford 150s and Ram Tough trucks. And they don't want to be part of this world, and they have their own thing that they want to do. And I'm also very interested in, you know, I wrote for Fortune for a long time and for Esquire. I'm interested in corporate life and the kind of what's happening right now with all the corporations consolidating, getting bigger. I heard today that Amazon is interested in buying Target.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if that's just a rumor, if it's true, but it makes sense, right? I mean,
they're beginning to like bricks and mortar again.
They are, right? After talking all those years about how bookstores did, you know, were passé, now all of a sudden they're going to have bookstores. But all of that is, that's just the way of the world, right? I mean, just it's what did the Who say? Here comes the new boss, same as the old boss.
Or long live the king, the new king.
All of a sudden, you know, I mean, we're going to be going into Amazon bookstores, but it's a bookstore, right?
You got it. Let's go to the phones.
Sure.
East of the Rockies, Eddie, truck driving in Texas to get us started. Eddie, go ahead.
How are you, George?
Wonderful. Thank you.
I really love your show, man. I drive, I'm on 24-hour call, and you keep me up during the night.
Well, thank you. Thanks for keeping America going, too, Eddie, with what you do.
Well, thank you, sir. Hey, I've got a comment, and it's kind of related to what you're talking about tonight. I was reading a science fiction story about a guy that was so smart that he wanted to be immortal, and he built a mechanical robot to put his brain in, and he actually did this. But he forgot one thing, and that was the phantom limb syndrome, you know, when somebody loses a limb.
Right.
Well, he wound up actually going crazy. He went mad because he didn't have any limbs to scratch. It was all robot. So I just thought it was kind of funny, you know, that if we do this, if you ever get to that point, I guess you're going to keep it biological and not mechanical.
You got it. Thanks, Eddie. Well, that's part of the downside, Stanley,
that's
isn't it?
That's really interesting. You know, I mean, it's the same phenomenon that you were talking about earlier, the unanticipated.
Yes.
The things that you just don't know. That's a wonderful idea. I don't know if you ever heard of a story called Donovan's Brain. Did you ever hear of that?
Donovan's Brain.
It's an old story by a writer named Kurt Seidmack, I think is his name. It's about a guy that rescues the brain of an industrialist who dies in a plane crash, and he keeps it alive. And the brain takes over the scientist's body and controls him because it's so powerful. So this
from the outside, right?
It's in a tank, but the brain takes over the scientist who thinks he's keeping it alive and studying it. Eventually, he develops a limp, which the industrialist had in real life, and he turns into Donovan. And that's another idea about how a brain can take over a body. But this phantom limb story is terrific. I mean, I just love that idea.
We've got Nancy in Houston, Texas now. Hi, Nance. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering, with all these people being over 100 years old, how will our planet have enough resources to support this with food, water, shelter, clothing? How in the world will this be taken care of?
Do we factor that in, Stanley? What happens to the population?
That's fascinating. I mean, I think one of the things that I think will happen is that there won't be that many people over 100 years old because it's going to be expensive. So you're going to have a small class of people who are able to do this, but, you know, the run-of-the-mill, you know, people who just make a living, it's going to be a lot harder. But I do think that there's a question of resources. I guess we'll have to write part of it that they go into outer space and colonize planets to help provide the Earth with resources. But I mean, if there are too many old people around, also you run into a tremendous number of problems. Like, you know, families are enormous, and people can have five or six spouses over the course of a lifetime, and you know, with all of those complications, with pretty complicated just having had two. So I think that there are a million different issues about, you know, very long life for people that exists to some extent now. I mean, quite a few people are 80 and 90 now, and there were very few when I was a kid. So,
Stanley, what about grieving? What happens if a family loses their child and they want to clone him and they want him back? Mm-hmm. Would they go that way?
You know, I think it just depends on what technologies are being developed. I don't know of successful human cloning, right? This was a very big thing back when Robin Cook, the author, wrote his book on cloning. But I don't think it's advanced. You know, they cloned the sheep, which died.
Dolly. Right.
Yeah, pretty quickly, though. Dolly died pretty quickly.
Well, she was the first, right?
Right, and she was lamb chopped.
Never want to be the first one in.
No, really, it's not a good policy. But I, you know, I don't know about the whole issue of if there's no death. It's such a complicated emotional issue. You know, you don't have grieving. Do you have religion? I mean, do you have what does it do to people? Because part of the human experience is to die. And, you know, there is a character in my book who is very, very old by natural means and is looking forward to passing.
What happens to the afterlife if no one is dying anymore?
Well, you know, I think...
That's another book.
I think we're getting some good ideas. I'm taking notes. I'm going to start taking notes here.
If you don't die, mm-hmm. and the afterlife starts drying up, doesn't it?
It gets pretty vast and uncrowded up there.
In Jewish tradition, they call the Hall of Souls the Guff.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe the Guff would never empty. You know, they're just there forever.
I think the thing is that the afterlife, or at least the perception of it or ideas about it, were created by people in the presence of death, right? It's part of the solution that people have created to understand the cycle of living. If you don't have death, or if it's very, very postponed, I think it could really change the way people treat each other and the way they treat the value of life. You know, to some extent, we don't value life as highly now, I think, as maybe people used to, although I don't know, really. The history of humanity doesn't seem to be that people value life all that much anyway, whether it's religion or not. So I think the idea of death is an integral part of the way that we view ourselves. So that's one of the things in the book that I talk about a little bit. But I think the greed to live forever, the idea that I could be around a really long time, it's extremely seductive. And, you know, I'd like to. You know, I admit it. A lot of people say they wouldn't if they're asked. I don't know if your listeners, you know, people think it's a crazy idea. But, you know, going back hundreds of years, certainly religion has dealt with it. We had Ponce de Leon, who looked for the fountain of youth. There's just been a lot of different approaches to this. And this one is through the kind of thing that we do in our culture, which is almost our religion, which is technology.
Let's go to Tom in Riverside, California now, west of the Rockies. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, George, it's an interesting topic.
It sure is.
The one aspect I'd like to bring into it is that part of who you are is the people you grow up with, the class. Let's say the class of your high school class. Mm-hmm. As you get older, some people do outlive their class. The people around them die, and you can maybe relate to it as you get older. You get into your 50s and 60s, you start thinking about it. You really start to see people fall around you when you get into your 60s, 50s, 60s, that you don't see that when you're in your 30s and 40s. And as you get older, your cousins and your friends that you had those memories all the way back, that goes all the way back to when you were a kid, mm-hmm. when you were 5 years old or 7 years old. Like they say, a memory lasts forever and a moment only for that second. But that won't be there. You know, if you live, if you have that choice, it won't be there. Those people won't be there. You can live till you're 120, but the people that you grew up with won't be there. It can't be forever. If you could make that decision to live, but can you take all the people that you grew up with you? You can't, really.
No, you can't. You can't take your loved ones. You can't take your family. In many cases, everybody else would be gone. Unless, now here's the interesting question for you, Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
What about your loved ones and your friends and your family, like Tom is mentioning? What if they live forever too, with memory and consciousness? Wouldn't it all be the same?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think probably if the technology became available to a lot of people, in other words, if it scaled up so that a lot of people could use it, as opposed to it just being a few very wealthy people, I think probably families would have plans by which the entire clan could be preserved, right? That would be like your insurance policy. You'd have your new bodies being printed at a certain point and waiting for you. You'd have the transfer mechanisms waiting for the people you love. And then there would be, Uncle Morty, and he doesn't get to go.
He doesn't get to go.
He's the one who's obnoxious at Thanksgiving dinner and stuff. I mean, it's an interesting question of how...
That's going to be who chooses.
Yeah, how do you get to choose, And maybe the family can only afford to take two of their children. I don't know. I mean, the whole thing, if you extend it out, in my book, it's really available only to the very wealthy, which it creates its own issues, right?
I mean, exactly.
Then you have...
You've got a class struggle.
People. You have two classes. You have the rich who live forever, and you have regular people who don't. That seems very weird, and the ultimate class struggle between people who are immortal and people who aren't. That's another book, that could happen.
Well, you know what happens, Stanley, when you mix the haves and the have-nots.
Yep.
Those who do not have don't get very happy.
Right, they're the live and the live-nots. So
that's right.
That's what you'd have. But this is a wonderful image of remembering all of your. The people that you grew up with and stuff, and I think you always have those memories, though. Whether you live 500 years or 50 years, you'll remember the kid that you took boxing classes with when you were 7 at the police athletic league.
What about your parents? Will they come along too?
I guess it would depend on how you feel about them, right?
I mean, my dad passed away several years ago, right around this time period. And sure, I miss him. I miss him a lot, and I would love to have him around me. But would it be strange? Because is he really your dad?
Yeah, is he really your dad? And isn't part of growing up as a person the very difficult process of losing your parents? I mean, now we're really getting a little dark here. I don't want to be a bummer, but that's part of becoming an independent person in the world is having to cope with that. I miss my mom and dad all the time.
Would you want to see them cloned back?
Yeah, I actually would.
You would?
Even
though deep down inside it's not them.
But maybe it is them. Who knows? Maybe if the technology is good enough, it's certainly close enough. I mean, how well did I don't know about you, but I didn't really know a lot about my dad. He died at 65. I was just beginning to kind of be an adult myself. I didn't know a lot about him. Maybe the new version would be a little easier.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Stanley Bing, his book, Immortal Life. Stanley, where do we get your book?
Well, of course, Amazon and the finer bookstores everywhere. I mean, it should be available pretty much any place you buy books. The publisher is Simon & Schuster. I also recorded the book for Simon & Schuster, and it's available both at Simon & Schuster but also at Audible, which...
Great, good for you. That's work, by the way.
Say it again?
Audiobooks, that's a lot of work.
You know, if you're an old actor, I was an actor for a while when I was younger. It's a lot of fun to read.
Were you? Were you on TV?
Yeah, but always as the guy that got killed.
What shows?
I was on soap operas in New York a long time ago.
Really?
Things called Ryan's Hope and
I remember that.
Another World and One Life to Live and those kind of things. But I generally played hoodlums and you know, guys that were stuffed in the trunk of a car in episode 3. So that was not great. But I was an actor for a while and I enjoyed it a lot, but I also wanted to have a family, and I think the trending for me was that being a writer was probably a little bit
good for you. Did you ever do Broadway?
I did off-Broadway.
Did you?
But I didn't do Broadway, no. I stayed in New York. What happened with me in my career was that I ran a theater company in Boston with my friends, and we had a wonderful time, and we had a lot of success, but I didn't get to New York until I was almost 30. And by then, a lot of people have established a foothold in the business, so it was tough. And I didn't enjoy auditioning as much as I perhaps should have. And
right.
I ended up having more success as a writer than I did as an actor. So I started writing plays and writing for magazines. And I found that people pay you for writing, whereas for acting, a lot of the time... They tell you, you know, this is good for your career. It's great experience. People will see you. And that's all very well and good. But it's a terrific feeling to get, you know, a check for $50 for something.
Oh, sure is.
And so I really enjoyed the writing part of it. And that got me into corporate life as a writer. You know, the advice I give to the young people who are getting into trying to get a job in business is to, you know, try to develop your writing skills as much as you can, because a lot of people really can't, and it makes you unique when people have ideas they want to express it in business settings. It helps to be a writer.
So, it's critical to be a good writer, I think. Were you born in Boston?
I was born in New York, but I grew up in a little place called Highland Park, Illinois.
I know Highland Park, Illinois well.
I loved that place. That was, it was really like, you know, a little community like you imagined. And it was sort of America that doesn't, maybe, I don't know if it exists anymore, but it sure existed there. You know, we all went and roller skating on Friday nights, and we went to the Police Athletic League to take boxing lessons.
Sure.
To the Alcyon Theater to see movies, which cost 35 cents at that time. And I'm not that elderly to remember all these things, and it wasn't that long ago. You know, people went to the library, we rode our bikes, there was no internet, there were no cell phones. One of the big changes in American life that I've seen is, I don't know, but where my kids grew up, you don't say to your kid, go out and play and be home in time for supper.
Or go out and play in the street.
You just don't do that. I mean, kids are not expected to be unsupervised anywhere.
We used to play football in the street, you know, street hockey,
sure,
all that stuff. You know, we used to be, you know, every time a car would come by, one of the kids would yell out, car! Everybody would get on the side of the street and let it go. I remember one day, Stanley, we were playing street football, touch football, mm-hmm. and I was the quarterback, and Ricky Cottrell, one of my neighbors, was my split end, and he went out for a pass. It was like just three of us on a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I threw this long pass to him, and he ran right into a parked car.
Right.
And it just almost like broke his leg. It was unbelievable. Anyways, let's get back to the calls here for you.
I guess so. It's good to remember these things, though.
Oh, yeah. Now, would we remember them in a new body?
I think that's the hope. You know, the hope is that if you do this digital transfer that they're talking about, and if you do get your new body, obviously, you know, you want to preserve the part of yourself that you know and the memories that you have. These are the things that you want to preserve. This is why religious solutions like reincarnation, for instance, I mean, it's nice to think that you come back as something else, but you're not preserved. You don't remember your prior lives in that scenario. So the real dream of immortality is to keep yourself alive and to keep your memories, because, you know, imagine what it would be like if you were born in 1700, for instance, and had seen everything that had gone on since then. It would just be, you know, an incredible privilege and experience. And, you know, even living 100 years is an experience now. So.
Well, you know, we are our memory. And here's an interesting question. Let me ask you this, and then we'll take our final calls here. Right now, when you're thinking, there's this little voice in your body, in your head. You can hear it. That's you. It's talking to us. It's phrasing, oh, what's his next question going to be? But there's that little voice in your head that is you. It's coming out of your memory or your mind or something. What is it that allows you to go to bed and wake up and none of that is erased?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, that the mind, the brain is unexplored territory mostly. That's why this process is so interesting, and what we talked about how much of it will indeed be transferred, if that's possible. A lot of that is mysterious. I mean, what is that little voice? We all have that. Sometimes there's a little voice, and you don't even know why it's saying those things. You know, I mean, I don't want to sound like a goofball here, but I mean, it's suddenly out of nowhere. It says, you know, where did I put my keys? You know, it's not fully in your control, that little voice.
No, but that little voice is talking to you.
Mm-hmm. It's yours.
Yeah.
And will that come with you, or will there be a different one? I don't know. You know, I think the book looks at some of these issues because, you know, I'm assuming that Gene, who is the body that's intended to be invaded by this other guy, that he has a lot of the things that we're talking about. He has a soul. He has a consciousness of who he is. He has very simple memories from, you know, just a few weeks that he's been around. These are all real things.
What's the earliest memory you can recall? How old were you?
Probably, I guess, around 4. And, you know, I'm not sure that these memories that I have are either real memories or they come from home movies, my parents.
Mine was a year and a half.
Yeah, what's yours?
I remember the night my mother went to the hospital to have my baby sister.
Oh, that's interesting. I remember sitting on the steps of the hospital when my brother was being born. I would be 2 years old, eating cheese doodles.
That's amazing. But so what I remember, this is what's so amazing, Stanley, is I remember the coat color she had on as she was walking out the door.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of like lying on the bed. My uncle, my dad's brother, was watching me, and he's like singing to me as they were leaving. And I don't know if I was crying because she was leaving, but I distinctly remember that little voice in my head saying, where are they all going? And that was a year and a half old, but I remember that to the day. Now, my mother, years ago, we were talking about this, and I told her what color coat she was wearing.
Wow.
And she's just stopped dead in her tracks and said, Georgie, I was wearing that coat that night.
That's pretty far back.
Yeah, a year and a half old.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, let's go east. JP in St. Louis. Hey, JP, welcome.
Good morning, George.
Hey there.
Long-time listener. I got a comment and a question for your guest.
Sure thing.
Okay. I listen coast to coast all the time, and it's very interesting, and I think this is all so very interesting. The first thing is, when you really think about it, who really wants drones? You talked earlier. Who wants drones all in the sky delivering razor blades, hamburgers, pizzas? I mean, it would be ridiculous. We have them all over the place. Instead of seeing natural birds, we'd see drones everywhere.
That's true.
You'd have no privacy. Who the heck wants that? I don't want to live in that kind of world.
I agree with you. And by the way, we're not asked how much of this new technology we want, you know. We're not asked if we want self-driving cars.
They're doing it.
They're doing it. And we're not asked if we want all these drones. I agree with you. I was in a forest recently, and I hear a buzzing, and it's not a bee. It's not a hornet. It's somebody that's flying a drone through the tree.
I want a UPS guy to bring my package from Amazon, not
that's
some
right.
drone.
You want a human being, darn
that's
it.
That's right. Go ahead, JP. You have a question.
Yes. Before the question, though, I just want to make this last quick comment.
Sure.
And this is the fact that it's been age old forever. Man's been trying to have it be immortal. Now, I believe in the spiritual world. I believe totally in the Bible. It seems to make the most sense on why we're here and how we got here. Scientists can't even explain what consciousness is. They have no idea how we all are here in the miracle of life itself. I mean, even Einstein believed in God. So, you know, this is a mere fantasy. It's almost laughable that little mankind actually is taking God out of the equation and thinks he can create immortality. You know, the Bible explains clearly that God made us, and he could do anything. He made us, and we hate immortality except the fall of mankind. That happened because he gave us free will. And if without free will, we would have been puppets. So he gave us free will. And the Bible says clearly there's one way to heaven, how we can have immortal life. So I want to ask your guest, does he believe in God?
I do. I don't know that I believe the same way that you do, but I do believe in a something that's much larger than ourselves.
And were you brought up as a kid believing that?
Not particularly, no.
You weren't.
But my mom was. My mom was had faith. My dad was a skeptic, So I have both.
Would you call him an atheist or an agnostic?
I would call my dad an atheist, and I would call my mom a very spiritual agnostic.
Okay.
And I think there are all kinds of ideas about what God is, and so I would have to say yes, that I do believe in that.
Next up, we go to Barbara in Los Angeles. Hey, Barb, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to know, what if you don't want to be part of this digital world? What
you have
you
no choice.
Out?
You have no choice to opt out. They're going to take you, Barbara.
No, I think you can opt out. You can go to like nice places like Vermont and state of Washington and other places where there are lots of trees and people who don't necessarily want to have their heads wired.
Well, they have lots of trees right now, but what's it going to be in 20 years from now?
Well, I think actually there'll be more trees because everything will centralize around these extremely urban cores where people can have their heads controlled by the cloud. That's what I think.
But she lives in L.A. She might not be able to get out to Vermont.
By the way, there's lots of trees in L.A., you know.
Not now. They've all burned down.
Oh, my gosh. That's the worst.
Horrible.
But, I think there's going to be plenty of nature. I really do. And I think that there will be people living in it. So I think Barb there, she could go there.
So you don't think this is going to be something forced down our throats?
I think if you're not careful, it's forced down your throat. I mean, I think technology is all around us. It's very seductive. And for the most part, if you don't actively question it, it will be marketed at you and you will endorse it. You will adopt it. It's too much fun not to. But I do think there are efforts underway right now. People are saying things like, you know, put away your phone when you eat your dinner. I mean, simple things like that.
Well, I think people should put their phones away.
Yeah.
I know it's addictive. You want to look at it. Or, you know, you might have your phone in your pocket and you'll feel somebody sent you a text and you feel it vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
But you're really, you know, I think it's kind of rude to have your phone out there when you're reading.
You're not present in the moment either. You're not actually living in the moment. You're in the cloud somewhere. You're waiting for things to buzz or to, you know. And the idea of sitting with and thinking your own thoughts without some stimulus, I mean, that's almost unheard of now in a lot of cultures. So the idea here is you've got to make an active attempt. You've got to understand the way technology is surrounding and invading us and make an attempt not to be part of that, an active attempt, because if you don't, you will fall, you know.
I've got a friend who looks at his phone, Stanley, I'm not kidding, every 20, 25 seconds.
He's an addict.
Even though nothing's happened. There's no message.
Right.
There's nothing.
Know, the implication when people do that is that they're living such an important life that every 20 seconds something's going to happen to them. You know?
You're right about that. Stanley, the clock has got us, but I want to thank you. We're going to hold on to your numbers. We'll give you a call at the office one day and talk more about some of the stuff you're doing.
I'd love to, George. I had a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Stanley Bing, right here on Coast to Coast. Up next, we're going to talk about the paranormal power of pets. And those of you who did not get on, I am so sorry, but keep trying. Sometimes people are holding for an hour, hour and a half, and they still don't get on. But we'll try to make it up for you. We'll be back in a moment. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And, we'll be back in a moment. The program continues.